My intention today is to cover the topic of Heter Iska. As I mentioned last week, there is no simin in Shulchan Aruch that deals with the rules of Heter Iska. There is no sif in Shulchan Aruch. There is no shach and taz that deal with Heter Iska. There's no direct place you can point to learn the rules of Heter Iska. There are references to Iska and to different forms that have been used over the years. Klal Yisrael has by and large accepted the use of Heter Iska forms, and our purpose today is to understand it. Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva that many people think a Heter Iska is like a kameya. You take the Heter Iska, you wave it at the loan a few times, and you say, Harezer, Kaparasi, Zaturasi, Zarasi, and suddenly the ribbis is mutter. Rav Moshe writes, not that it's wrong al pi hashkafa, but it doesn't work al pi halacha. Somebody who uses a Heter Iska and has no clue what the Heter Iska is, Rav Moshe writes, is not allowed to use a Heter Iska. My original intention was to learn Sif Yotes with Taz Yud Zayin, show you that you're confused, and after confusing, try to explain that to Iska, and then relearn Taz Yud Zayin so that we could understand. That seems to be very much the style in Derech HaLimud, is to confuse people and then help them. What? Alright, so there are two things we have to do. One would be, a nice thing to do, would be to go through the history of the Heter Iska and where it started from, how it evolved, and the different forms that were used over the time. And it would be a nice thing to do. It's for a separate shiur. Today's shiur is to understand the way the Heter Iska works, why there are different Heter Iska forms. Everyone says, just give me a Heter Iska. Which one do you want? So there are basically two variations on a Heter Iska form, which means there are four basic forms. And the idea today is just to understand Pasha Pshat in a Heter Iska and how it works. Now, before we get to Heter Iska, it's crucial to understand what an Iska is. What is an Iska? Are there enough copies of the Heter Iska form? Otherwise we can make some more. Want to go make some more copies of that? Take that, okay. Let's turn on the machine, the button in the bottom right in the front. This is from the laws of Ribbis, yeah. Alright, first of all, there's something called an Iska. Before you know a Heter Iska, there's an Iska. The inyan of Iska is very simple. Somebody is starting a business. He needs capital to get the business started. Very often, you have a silent partner and an investing partner and a managing partner. When we say silent partner, that means that he's not actively managing the business. He may be very vocal about the things that go on, but he's not there. His job is to provide the funding and very often to keep an eye on that things run properly. A typical Iska is a case where Reuven is opening a business. Shimon is an investor. So Reuven gets in touch with Shimon. He says, Shimon, I am going to open this business. Would you be interested in investing? I'll let you have half of the business. We'll make it a 50-50 partnership. You provide the capital, some of the capital, all the capital, whatever the deal may be. And in exchange for that, I'll run it, and we'll have a 50-50 partnership in the business. Now, to the extent that the agreement is such that the investor is a real partner, he stands to lose if the business goes down, and he stands to gain a proportion of the business profit. In other words, let's say their agreement, the Gemara's case of an Iska, is an agreement which is 50-50. The investing partner provides the capital, the managing partner provides the know-how or the active involvement, and their agreement is that the business is 50-50, That's just an example. Any percentage would be fine. And the profits are then split 50-50. The profits are split 50% to the investor, 50% to the managing partner. Losses, what's with losses?
50-50.
Also 50-50. Now, despite the fact that the investor provided 100% of the capital, the Gemara's case, the case of a Iska, is that the managing partner is in effect guaranteeing 50% of the investment. He's saying whatever losses happen, we'll split 50-50. So if $100,000 was invested into the business, and the business goes the first month and it loses $1,000, the $500 is debited to the investing partner, and $500 losses is debited to the managing partner. And hopefully over time they'll make money. If they don't, it'll be a debt. The managing partner will have debt to the investing partner.
It has to be 50-50?
It does not have to be 50-50. That's the Gemara's example.
Oh, yes.
And a typical Hete Iska, as we'll see, is 50-50. Now, if you want to understand the typical Hete Iska, you will have to know the taich of the words Chatzi Milva, Chatzi Pekada. Understanding that one concept is crucial to understanding the way the Hete Iska is drawn up. If you understand what Chatzi Milva, Chatzi Pekada is, the rest of it will go relatively easy. Chatzi milva, chatzi pekad means, in an iska, not a heter iska, an iska, a real iska, a real case. I'm somebody who's investing, so someone calls me up, he says, no, I'm investing, do I need a heter iska? He explains to me exactly this deal. So I always tell them, you don't need a heter iska, you're an iska. What you're doing is an iska. Heter iska changes alone into an iska, but if you are a real investor, so you are doing an iska. You don't need a het iska. Your agreement is not a loan. It's an iska. What is the agreement? Now, here you have to hold cup. To make it simple, we'll assume the managing partner is providing zero. He's not providing a penny at all. And the entire $100,000 of investment is being provided by an investing partner. Now, that $100,000 is buying him 50% of the business. Now, halt kap. Let's say it's Sunday morning, you hear a shiur. There's such a thing as heter iska. You go over to someone else, you say, you know something, I have this great business idea, I need $100,000 to start, put it into the business, we'll split 50-50. Good. So you write out a check, $100,000, you have enough to cover in the checking account, and you give it to him. And he walks home, he opens an account for ABC Business Company, he deposits $100,000. Next morning, nothing started yet. You have this business, ABC Company, which has $100,000. Whose money is it? Let's say the company is going to dissolve that afternoon. The idea flopped, he wanted to make wickets, no more wickets. You guys know what wickets are? Huh? There's a movie about wickets, right? That widgets. I'm sorry, widgets. Many years since the movie. Widgets. Anyway, I think it was ABC. They called ABC Company there, right? So he opened up. No, let me just finish, okay? Because it's going to be confusing. 1 minute. He opened up a bank account, deposited $100,000 cash sitting in there. 1 minute. Right now, it's a 50-50 business. If I was the managing partner, I'd tell him, you know what? We have an agreement. We have an ISCA. Business is 50% mine, 50% yours. You get half the profits, I get half the losses. So if there were no profits, no losses, we'll dissolve the business. Here's your $50,000. I have my $50,000. We go home. And that's the agreement, you know? It's a chatzi.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Look at the
top. What? Well, the business is 50% mine, 50% yours. The whole business is 50-50. So Chazal say, the Gemara calls this chatzi milva chatzi pekod. What happened is, when you give $100,000 and you get 50% of the business, but the business is $100,000, what you're really doing is chatzi milva, chatzi pekod. The word pekod in here means investment. I'm giving you $100,000. $50,000 is my half of the business. $50,000 is your half. Your half is a loan. Your half, your $50,000, you're going to have to repay. Right? Someday the business will have millions of dollars, and I'll get this $50,000 back from you. you're going to have to repay me the $50,000 because you have half the business. I have half the business. There's $100,000 there. Half of the investment I'm doing is a Pekadon. It's my money in the business. The other half is your money in the business. The business is 50-50. How's it your money? You owe me the $50,000. Which means, if there's a loss, let's say the whole $100,000 goes kaput, you owe me $50,000, which is true. That's what sharing the losses means. Sharing the losses means, now we're making a business, losses are half your responsibility, half mine. That's the agreement of Chati Mil v'Chati Pekadon. I invest $100,000. If God forbid that $100,000 disappears, you owe me $50,000. Why do you owe me $50,000? Because a typical iska, where a business is 50-50, means that the initial capital that's invested is half money of the investing partner, half of the managing partner. And whatever the numbers may be, it may be that the managing partner is investing $50,000 and the investing partner is investing $100,000, and it's a 50-50 business. If that were the case, $25,000 would be a loan. To bring up the total capital investment should be 50% his, 50% his. And in a case where losses or profits are shared 50-50, the business is considered to be a 50-50 business. Ownership is generally defined by liability. Whoever shares losses owns a business to that extent. So that if it's a 50-50 investment, it's 50-50, and that is called Chatzi Milva Chatzi Pekadon. It's half Milva, half Pekadon, which means if I'm investing, we split losses 50-50, we split profits 50-50, I'm giving you all the capital, then half of that capital is a loan to you. That is the basic idea you have to have for a head to iska. I'll explain. That's Kulei Pekadon, which I'm going to get to shortly. But that is the way head to iska evolved is that it started from this typical business arrangement, which typically was 50-50, that's the Gemara's example, which was Chatzi Milva, Chatzi Pekadon. It's not set in stone. You could have a three-quarters Milva, one-quarter Pekadon, or three-quarter Pekadon, one-quarter Milva. This is only an example. And 50-50 is a typical case, two partners, 50-50. That's an iska. And that is not a question of ribis, that's an investment. And there is no zero ribis issue in this typical business arrangement. What happened is, there was a situation where someone came to someone and he told him, now this is the way it evolved. It didn't start with Het Iska. It started, someone went to an investing partner. He said, you know, I need $100,000 for my business. He said, fine, but you know, I'd like some kind of guarantee. I'd like some type of guarantee on my money. Now, a guarantee on the money makes it ribis. If you guarantee the principal and the interest, that's ribis deraisa. Why? Because when you guarantee money, the liability is all yours. If the managing partner guarantees the money, the liability is all his. Ownership is defined by liability. Somebody who takes $100,000 as an investment and guarantees it is in effect not taking an investment, but taking a loan. Now, in order to secure the loan, he may have to tell the person, I'll give you half the profits, but it's still a loan. If he guarantees the money, it's a loan. If the person guarantees it, there's a personal guarantee, then that is defined as a loan. So what happened? Somebody was investing. Someone said, listen, I'm going to invest the money with you. If the business loses money, I understand I have to take a loss. But, I don't know you well. For all I know, maybe you're going to lie to me that the business has a loss. So I'm going to require that if you say there's a loss, you're going to have to swear. You have to make a shvu in bez. Or you'll have to bring witnesses. You have to bring edim that it was a loss. I don't want to have to trust you on the issue. Now this, it was seen as a normal business arrangement. And it was accepted. It was accepted by the Paiskim that requirement is reasonable, doesn't change it from a pekadon into a loan. And therefore, the investing partner could ask the managing partner for some type of a guarantee on for proof of losses or proof of amount of profit. And that arrangement, as it evolved, became part of a business arrangement. The business deal was this way. Now, Rav Moshe writes that it's pashut, if I do a business deal with you, and I say, look, if there's a loss, you have to swear. And then there's a loss that I'm aware of. Let's say, Chalila, the building burns down. Well, let's say we're investing, the whole business is an investment, we invest in real estate in a certain location. And I know that the real estate in that location had a terrible fall. I can't ask for a shvuah for my business partner. That makes no sense. What am I asking for a shvuah? That's Tama Harama. I'm hoping he won't want to swear. I know it's true. I can't ask for it. But in a case where I don't know, I'm not there, I don't know exactly what took place, this arrangement is part of a normal ISCA agreement. There was a certain amount of dispute as to whether asking for witnesses for the amount of profit is reasonable. It's not normal in a business for to have witnesses on the amount of profit. So that it evolved that on this profit there was a shvua that was asked. On a loss of principle, witnesses were required. That's the way business practices evolved at a certain time. And therefore this became a common business arrangement. There's an investing partner, a managing partner. The investing partner says, listen, I don't want to have to trust you. Bring witnesses if you claim the building burnt down or there was a robbery, you have to bring witnesses. And if the amount of profit, I'll trust you with the shvuah. We're not talking about loivi yet. We'll get to that. You're jumping ahead. First, we're talking about the way it evolved originally with an iska.
Does he have to specify that he is through raiser so it's understood?
We'll see. It is specified. Now, one second. You're jumping. One second. One thing at a time. We'll get to everything. But if you don't, we have to understand it, and then we're going to get to it. This is the way the old iskas existed, and this is an iska. What happened in a period of time, probably in the 17th century, as commerce became more as the practice of commerce evolved and possibilities of investment became more, the heter iska started to be used. The heter iska basically did is said, you want me to lend you money? I can't lend you for ribbis. So you came back, you said, let's make it into an iska. I said, what's an iska? You explained an iska to me. And we sort of winked at each other. We said, you know, look, I'm anticipating the business will make 10% profit. Now, if the business makes 10%, how much is the investor entitled to? 5%. Chatzi milva, chatzi pekod. So what I'll tell you is like this. We'll draw up a contract saying that we anticipate 5% profit. That's probably what will happen. I don't think there'll be losses. If I thought there'd be losses, I wouldn't go into the business. So let's do it this way. If things work as anticipated, I don't have to swear. I'll just give you the 5%. I don't like to swear. I'll just give you the 5%. If I claim that there was less profit than the 5% or I lost the principal, then I'll go with the shvuah, and I'll go with the witnesses, then I'm willing to do it. But I'd like that if things go as anticipated, that I'll just give you the 5% and you'll be meichel the shvuah, and very often the contract calls for being meichel if there's more than the 5%, and let's do it that way. And that became a heta iska form. The heta iska form has two parts. A, it creates the iska, and B, it says that if I'll give you the 5% that we anticipate as profit, then you absolve me from the requirement of proof, of shvuah, of any type of accounting. That is the iska form. Now, obviously, there are some drawbacks to it, but before the drawbacks, I would just like to read to you, this is a regular, all heta iska forms have this basic form. There are certain changes that can happen, but Let's read. You have there that disc. Let's just read it. It should be easily understood. The confusing aspects we'll get to afterwards. First, let's make sure we understand it. Now, I, the undersigned, have received. Who gets the hetiska? Like any IOU, who gets it? The person who gives the money receives the hetiska. So the person receiving the funds, I, the undersigned, have received the sum of blank from, hereafter referred to as investing partner. The word loan, borrowing, is never used in a hetiska. The word borrowing, loan, not used. It's an investment. Hereafter referred to as the investing partner, to be used for business purposes. I obligate myself to utilize these funds in a manner which I believe will generate profits. Any profits realized or losses sustained shall be shared equally between the investing partner and myself. That's an ISCA. Any claim of loss must be verified through the testimony of two qualified witnesses in and under conditions acceptable to an Orthodox Jewish court of law. Any claim regarding the amount of profit generated by the funds shall be verified under solemn oath before and under conditions acceptable to an Orthodox Jewish court of law. Till here, that's the ISCA. Now, right away, a person declares, well, what's going on? Two witnesses for that, a shvua for that. You really need this? Why don't you just do everything with a shvua, where everything were witnesses? Well, the truth is, you can do everything with a shvua if you want. You can make the form much simpler and just say any claims regarding loss of principal or shall be verified by a shvua. To say everything by witnesses is considered a little unreasonable. To know the amount of profit in most types of business, to require witnesses is considered totally unreasonable. And therefore, that would not be used. There are some heteriska forms, which you'll see, which do say just shvua. They don't say anything about witnesses. It's okay. The heteriska form evolved this way because this is the way business was done. And that's the way most heteriska forms have it. What? Generally, people don't make shvuas, which is good for the investor. You could make it. We're trying to draw it up in a way in which there is technically a possibility of loss, but pretty confident that it won't happen.
So now, it's not practical about how much profit. So why does it say?
So that's why it says shvua. That's why it doesn't say what.
Now,
what? You could do that. You could have a third party. You could do it a third party. It can be drawn up any which way. It's typically drawn up this way. Now you may ask, why don't we leave a space for the business? Leave a line. It's to be invested in and fill in the business. Truth is, the reason is because if you're an investing partner, you're best off knowing less about the business. Because if you are independently aware of the fact that there was a loss, then you can't use the hetiska. Because this whole hetiska, as I mentioned earlier, is based on the fact that you're trusting the other party, and your trust can require a shvua or witnesses. If you're to write, it's to be invested in the real estate at this and this location, and then you would know independently that the real estate went down, then you would be stuck. You really could not require a shvua or witnesses for something you're aware of. You could not get your principal back, and you certainly couldn't get any profit. Now, what? You can, but you would not have any interest in doing it. Why would you send in an independent auditor if, under the terms of the hetiska, you can get paid? The hetiska allows you to get paid. Why would you want to send in an auditor? You want to know as little as possible about the business so that the terms of the hetiska stand. Now, the way business is run today, it's, except in the case of real estate, it's rare. Let's say you give someone money to open a business on Coney Island Avenue, and the business closes down. After 2 months, he opens a restaurant and it closes down. You don't know anything about the restaurant. You saw it, you drove by, that's all you know. Is that called independent knowledge of the failure of the business? Not really. You don't know. He could have taken the money and put up a front and invested it. He could have done other things with the money. You don't really know what happened. Or he could have invested in the business. He could have been a pesheya. and things that he did. By a piece of pshia, he might have opened the restaurant and closed every afternoon at 7 p.m. I don't know. You know, he might have done things that are pshia that would hold, that would have him liable for a pekadon. Therefore, in most cases in modern business, this possibility that you'll have independent knowledge of a failure is not a real possibility, because people generally don't really know.
In most cases, the head is really a mental document. Really a very elaborate contract
which describes the loan. I'll explain that as soon as I finish reading it. I want to explain.
Why did his loan called
Pekadon? Chati Pekadon. The word Pekadon means money which is given not for a loan. There is no word for investment except Pekadon.
Except she works for Pekadon, may not necessarily work for
investment. No, it does, because, no, it certainly does. Unless you indemnify the person against pshia, which nobody ever does. But it is, it does have a din pekadon. The person's pshia with my money is liable. That's for sure. If he took my money, used it, we had no right to use it.
That's an act of
robbing.
It's not the way he calls it, the way that's
for pshia. Pekadon means he has a din of Hashem Yisachar, and there's no question.
Now,
nobody knows what pekadon means yet. We're going to get to that. Hold on. It is agreed that if I return the above mentioned principal to the investing partner together with an additional blank, additional what? Okay, you said 5%. It's easy, right? 5%. Sometimes the percentage is tied to some type of rate. So you could write 1% above prime. Or, if it's more complicated, you could write to an additional amount as per our separate agreement. You could refer to a separate agreement. As payment for a share of the profits generated, I will not be required to make any further payment, nor will I be required to make an oath. I am obligated to make this in payment on or before, whatever the agreement may be. If payment is not made by this time, the terms of the iska shall continue. This is a very important clause, that the iska continues. The iska may be an agreement for if your contract is going to say, I'm giving you an iska, we're doing an investment for 3 years. So we do an investment for 3 years. At the end of the 3 years, I want my money back. Sometimes the person doesn't have the money. What do you do then? So then it goes on to 4, 5, 6 years till you get paid. The person can tell you, all right, the end of 3 years, you get your 5%. For year 4, 5, and 6, you don't get anything because our business ended. So it's important that the head iska contain the clause that the terms of the iska continue beyond the life of the investment. I have received $1. From the investing partner's payment for my services during the term of the partnership. Why is this important? Let me explain why it's important and that you have to know what you're doing with the $1. Over $1, people have sometimes had problems. I'll tell you what it is. First, let me tell you why the dollar is here. We have a business 50-50. I'm investing. You're the managing partner. But 1 minute. It's chatzi milva, chatzi pekadon. Am I a lender to you? Yes. I'm a malva to you. Because $50,000 I lent you, and $50,000 I invested. Since we have a loiva malva relationship, you really can't do favors to me. You can't say, you know what, I'll give you 51% of profits, or 60%. You can't do that. You're a malva. You're a loiva to me. 50% of the profit goes to you, which means half the money, $50,000 is a halvah to you, or $50,000 not. So 1 minute, if this is a 50-50 business, why are you putting in all the time and energy? Why are you working there? Now, some businesses, taka have, that the business pays the managing partner a salary, and besides that, he owns half of the profits of the business. That's fine. You don't need the $1. But sometimes, in order to get the investor to invest, there is no salary. The person invests, he gets 50% of the profit, and that's all he gets, is 50% of the profit. The work that he's doing would seem to be ribbis. The Gemara says that you're allowed to give. The Gemara mentions a certain coin. We don't know the exact value. It appears not to be a pruta, for whatever reason. But certainly, it's less than a dollar. And if you give him a dollar for his work, it's really a token payment for his work. It's not what his work is worth. The Gemara says that if it's part of the original agreement, and the Gemara implies that the payment has to be done originally, then you could be yaitza with that. Why? Why is he working for a dollar? So Chazal say, because we understand. It's Gemara is an expression similar to ner le'echa, ner le'meya. Gemara says, gevil l'turei, a person feeds, is going to feed the animals. So let's say we invested in animals. There are 10 animals in the barn. So he really should only feed his half of the animals. I should feed my half of the animals. So I tell him, you know what? While you're feeding my half of the animals, feed your half of the animals. That's not work, which requires a major salary. It's the same thing. It's gevil l'turei. It's feeding his animal, feeding my animal. Big deal. Not a big difference. You're investing in real estate. So big deal. You invest half the money, you invest the full money. The amount of tircha is generally not so great. And therefore, Chazal allowed a $1 payment, provided that it's done ahead of time. Chazal say that if you did the whole thing already, you forgot about this $1 payment, you did, everything is done, and if afterwards you wake up about it, the dollar is no good anymore. Because then the work has already been done. It wasn't done under an agreement for a dollar payment. There's already a chayv of a salary. Now, for him to take an existing chayv of a salary and to be meichel for $1, that's ribbis. He can't do that. So therefore, this $1 payment is important. There are some heta iskas that don't have the dollar payment, but do have. It says that basically that the investor is really entitled to 55% of the business, but he's giving him 5%. In exchange for his tircha, which is an acceptable way. Every hetiska klali is that way. You go into a bank, they have a hetiska klali, you're not giving them a dollar. This is drawn up this way, which is also acceptable. Now, if the question on this, fine. If it's
no, I was just going to say the same thing in American law, we call consideration. If you look at a deed, when someone sells something, it always says consideration of $10 or something like that, which is a nominal amount. And otherwise, it's not considered a viable transaction. In other words, for someone doing something back and forth.
Okay, very good.
But the business cannot happen unless you have 100,000.
Right.
So it cannot happen less than that. So why need a dollar for it?
You need the dollar for his tircha. Why is he putting in the tircha, not you? Why don't you put in
the
work?
If the guy doesn't give him the $50,000, lend him the $50,000, the business.
It's fine. So you want the business, do the business. You put in half the work, he should put in half the work. So that's why this is. Your reason is why a dollar is enough, because if the person needs the whole 100,000 for the business.
So in the formulation of 55, why can't the person find initially that he saved the dollar should be
50? Whatever the agreement is. Whatever the agreement is.
The loan for the 55%,
it's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer that. Yes?
If I'm getting capital for investment, and I'm sharing a facility of what, I won't get the powerful business.
Yeah. You really, technically, don't need a het iska. If you really sat down with somebody and made up an investment, and then you pulled at your chin and you said, well, let's do it this way, let's do it that way, and you came up with this, you don't need a het iska for. The reason we need it is because typically it doesn't work that way. Typically someone says, I need a loan. He says, you know, I don't lend money without interest. But you're a Jew, I can't give it you. And then it says, let's use a het iska. Now you have to explain what you're doing. If you sat down and this business arrangement just came from your discussion, you're right. You don't need a het iska, that's an iska. The het iska form is needed for people who want to change what would otherwise be a loan into a het iska.
Now,
if they know what it means, they don't need the form. If Tutami de Chachamim, from Moshe Rabbi Yaakov, were doing a business deal, all they have to do is say the words, Al pi het iska, and it's fine. They say, well, just do a het iska deal, fine. If both sides know what's going on, there's no reason in the world to have the shtar. You don't need it. Two people. There's no reason to have it. Then you don't need the dollar.
But you put in that
now,
he's getting a salary?
You don't have to put it in here. If he's getting a salary, he's being paid for his tircha. Now, we'll talk about it. Let's just go say that's a good question. And when I get to Kula Pekad Day, we're going to talk about that. Okay, one second. Let's finish the language. In the event of any conflict between the terms of this ISCA agreement, the terms of any other agreement signed by the two parties, in regard to these funds, the terms of this agreement shall prevail. Now, Now, this is also a crucial paragraph. And the reason is that very often documents are drawn up which call it a loan, which deal with it as a loan, which use the word interest rather than the word profits. And the question is, what's going on? Here, you have this Het Ha'iska. On the other hand, you have documents that call it a loan and interest. Who are you fooling? What are you really doing? The Ramesh has a tshuva. He writes that if you have from a yidin, and they really mean for it to be the iska, that from a yidin they wouldn't lend a ribis without this. So they're using a real Het Ha'iska. They are permitted to write up a contract which calls it interest, which calls it loans, for the simple reason that it's just easier to pursue someone in court with a typical document, with a typical document that the court recognizes, and the court doesn't have to start figuring out what does this contract really mean. And Rav Moshe writes that that's okay, provided that when you go to court, you don't take more money than you're entitled to. The court, using the other document, may give you more than you're entitled to. But as long as you don't, between you and the yid, it's the iska that's binding. You want to have a protection. So for that protection, you're drawing up a different contract. That's perfectly okay. It doesn't matter. It just has to be understood between the two of you that what you're doing is a het ha'iska, and you're assuming it's two for a yid, that's really what they mean, it's really what they want. Then that's okay. And that's the reason for this paragraph. The last paragraph, this agreement follows the guideline of Heter Iska, as explained in Sefer Bris Yehuda. Obviously, you don't need that. It's there just in case circumstances come up which are not covered by the form. So it says, look it up. It could say Sefer Bris Yehuda. It could say anything, any nusach. But basically, if you look in the old Heter Iskas of the Sman, the Chachmas Adon, they always wrote Api Heter Iska Shel, whoever they quoted. It's agreed that any dispute which may arise in connection shall be submitted before. I only put that in. Not every Het Ha'iska has that. I basically put that in to protect myself. You're printing Het Ha'iska for people. Later on, different points may be contested. It's better in any business arrangement to have a Rav's name between the partners that you go to. Very often, when people have a business agreement, say, no, we're not going to have any problems, no problem, it'll be fine, nothing doing, you know. I have a friend who's a Rav out of town, so he had his first situation with a couple that was separating, they were going to get into a divorce. I told him, listen, get them to Besdin, get the get done right away, have them sign an arbitration agreement because they're going to fight. He says, nah, they're never going to fight. There's no money to fight over. There's nothing to fight over. They're both nice people. And so last Shabbos, I heard the police came down to the shul. They forbade this man from coming to shul anymore. He refused to give a get. And he came in, and someone, I don't know how they called the cops on Shabbos exactly, and the cops came down, and Shain Gavarin. So there are a lot of dreams beforehand that everything will be fine. The fact is that disputes arise. Even good people have disagreements. And it's good every business should have a Rav, somebody that's trusted from both sides. It could be a Rav, could be a lawyer, whoever you trust, that both sides go to. And it's a good idea. Now, obviously, the Rav is only going to paskin this based on the rules of Het Ha'iska. And that's fine. The bottom of the page has witnesses. There's no need to have witnesses in a Het Ha'iska. There's really no need for it. It's there. It's optional. And if somebody wants it, they can have it. If you want, you don't have it. So I've explained to you a typical Het Ha'iska. Yes. And then the one dated later would be the one that carries, right? If a secular document has the same clause, then the one dated later would carry in court. And you would have to be sure that it's done that way.
So to make this work, though, shouldn't you have to say in the other document you won't go to court, that you'll go to the Rav or the Besdin, wherever you're going to put here?
It would be better to do that, but it's not necessary to do that. Right, this is a typical Het Ha'iska. There are many questions you've asked which can make it confusing, so I tried to keep it as simple as can be. Now, I said there are two variations. Let me just explain the two variations so you understand it. Now we'll get into where it gets complicated. One variation is someone wants to borrow money to make a chasana. Mr. Paramani, make a chasana. I say, listen, you know, I'm living off the interest. I'm getting 3-4%. I'll lend it to you if you give me the 3-4%. Let's make a hetisk. All right, we'll make a hetisk. 1 minute. The hetisk says, I obligate myself to use these funds in a manner which I believe will generate profits. Chasanas don't generally generate profits for the parents of the selling out the parents. So what do you do? How do you use this hetisk? It's a problem. Now you can say, yeah, I'll obligate myself to utilize it. I won't utilize it, so I'll have to pay. Yeah. That's not the way hetisk works. Therefore, there is, in here in the book, at this, where money is advanced for personal use, it just changes to the following terms. So the money is, I have received the sum subject to the following terms. In exchange for the aforementioned sum, the investing partner shall acquire a share in any investment, real estate, or business which I own. In other words, I'm using this money to make chasana, but I own a business, I own a home. So what I'm doing is, I'm selling you a chelik in my business, under the terms of a hetayiska, ki'ilu, you invested originally, you didn't invest originally, you're investing now. But I'm selling you a chelik in my business now, in exchange for these monies, and we expect that there'll be profits from that other business, and mimela, everything goes on, if I swear, I have to swear about that other business, etc. This is a hetayiska for personal use. That's the only change from that to this.
If a person doesn't own a business,
he doesn't. If a person owns no business, owns no real estate, has no investment at all, he should not use a hetayiska. It's really not an option for someone who has nothing. He doesn't have. If he has an IRA, he has an IRA. It's not so pusher to write that the IRA you expect will generate 10% profits. But at least not nowadays. But if a person has zero investments, he should not use a hetayiska. Because what is the hetayiska? It's just the kameya. It's not something. Are there rabbanim who will use it? There probably are rabbanim who will say, yeah, you say you have investments. So if you lie to someone, you invest money with you, so you're liable, so you give him the 5%. But it's not, most of the printed tshuvas do not go along. There is one tshuva in, I think it's the Maram Shik, who allows it, based on a cheshbin, which is a little confusing, but he basically says, is if I don't use that disk, I'll have to borrow money by interest by a guy. I'll have to pay more. And then I'll have an ongoing increased debt on my bottom line. So I'm selling that commodity, my bottom line, for the hetayiska terms. That's basically what he creates. I shouldn't say it's the Maram Shik. I don't remember who it is. It's someone of that generation, and it's not something which really should be done. Now, yes.
Assuming the person has a house, or you don't know what he has, and you find something that I'm investing in, I don't know what you're doing with your money. People don't sign documents like that.
Right, there are paiskim who prefer that. In a case where you're investing in a real business, this concern is not there. But in the case of personal use, there are those who prefer that the investment be designated. In other words, not everyone's happy with the language that I put here. I put, shall receive a share in the value received in any investment, real estate, or business which I own. There are those who prefer in all investments, real estate, and businesses which I own. In other words, rather than saying any, and then which one is it? Unknown. So how later is anybody going to swear or prove anything? You can't even trace the money because the money was spent on the chasna. So how are you going to know which one? The truth is none. Which one do you have a kinyan in? So it's probably ideal to designate, Baruch Hashem, the way real estate prices are today, people who own a home basically can anticipate the revenue and the amounts that they're probably going to be paying for a hetisk arrangement. And for that reason, it would be better to designate real estate. If you want to be safe, you designate all those investments. That way, it's just like spreading your portfolio. You have a greater amount of guarantee. It probably would be better had I written in all rather than in any. These are all translations of Hebrew hetiskes, and I assume, I don't remember which one I translated to do this, I assumed that the language there had a vav, which could mean or and, you know. So I wrote in any. Maybe it would be better to have an all, maybe. When they get to the fourth printing, maybe I'll change it, you know. They called me for the second printing for any changes, corrections. I told them there were no mistakes. That typographical one. Then the third printing, I already had a lot of mistakes. So I have at home one of these which has all the corrections. And maybe I should have to change it to an all. It's easy change from any to all. Maybe that would be a good idea.
Say we should use this. If we're going to have this, we should do it in English or Hebrew or both.
You can do English. There's no benefit of Hebrew over English. It's the English over Hebrew, as long as it's a good hetesh. Now, so in the first case, you don't need a kinyan. Here, I did mention Kenyan. One second. I did write a Kenyan in here somewhere. No, in the case where it's a previously existing one. You don't have it. You don't have number two. Okay, I translated it from Tom Rivers. I lost where I translated it from. Okay, the Kenyan is, strictly speaking, the Kenyan is not required because Kesef is kind of on Karka. There are many, it gets a little complicated, there are many Heta Iskas which do call for a Kenyan. The reason that it calls for a Kenyan is, the whole purpose of a Kenyan is to show Gemira's Das, and that's the reason that it generally calls for a Kenyan. I left out the Kenyan, I don't remember based on what I think. And that's the reason that it generally calls for a Kenyan. I left out the Kenyan. I don't remember based on what. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted in the Tam Ribis as saying that you can leave the Kenyan out. Yeah, I think so. Okay, if obviously it was metalcolum, you would need a Kenyan, but it's all karka and business thing.
Why is it really
okay? No, wait, so I just said I mentioned two variables. One variable is this, where it had to change from business use to personal use. There's a second variation of Heter Iska. And Rav Shlomo Zalman felt that in certain circumstances it should be used. That's called the Kulei Pekadmi form. Now here it gets a little complicated. Okay, it was asked before. When I do Chatzi Milva Chatzi Pekadmi, I'm a Malvin Aleiva. Lamaisa, I do have a relationship with him now, a Malva Aleiva. Now, if he's someone who I don't have many, I'm not involved with very often, I'm investing with him, you know, through a mutual, very often a broker. So no problem, I use Merchati Milva Chati Pekad. What happens if it's someone I daven with in shul, I'm more friendly with him, and now I invest with him, we have a business together, we're going to become good friends. So suddenly, we're going to start doing each other favors. So, for me to do him favors, not a problem, I'm the Malva. He'll start doing favors for me. Why is he doing me favors? It's very unclear. Is it because we now have a friendship? Or is it because I lent him money? I did him a favor. You know, he had this great business idea. He's making parnasa from it. And it's all because of me. So in a way, there's a downside to using this form because it does create a malva-leva relationship. That's one downside to this hetisk. The second downside would happen in years where interest rates are high. Today, interest rates are low. There was a time in 1980, interest rates were 12, 13% was what you were getting in the bank. They were 20%, right? Let's say at such a time, I'm getting 12% in the bank. Someone says, invest with me. I said, 12%? 12%? Yeah, I'll make 12% profit. 1 minute. Chatzi milva, chatzi pekadmi means we're saying we anticipate 24% profit, of which half goes to me, half goes to you. The contract has to say profits are shared equally. And I anticipate that my half of the profits is going to be 12%. It's going to be 12% of the 100,000 or 24% of my 50,000. Now, 24% may be an unrealistic sum, very often is, in an investment. In that case, using the Chatzi Milva form is not a good idea. Therefore, it would be a good idea to use a Kulei Pekadmi form. What's a Kulei Pekadmi form? It says, listen, I'm investing $100,000 with you. This $100,000, I get all the profits I get all the, I have to suffer all the losses for this $100,000. Everything goes to me. Where do you make money? So we have an agreement. In exchange for your work, you'll get 50% of the business. Or in exchange for something you're going to do, you'll be entitled to money. If I put in the $100,000 business and tomorrow you say, business is closing, let's split it. No, you didn't do anything to get any money yet. The money, the principal is 100% mine. Profits, could be we'll give you 50% profits in exchange for whatever. The principal remains $100,000. It's mine, it's a pecut. What? Why? Oh. So that's a big question. So this, kulei pecut in form, sounds great. It's no milvaleiva relationship. I don't have to double the anticipated profits. It's a great arrangement. As a matter of fact, here I have in the book, I have a hetisk, a kulei pecut in form. Again, I have two. One for business use and one for personal use. A kulei pecut in form, which should be used. What's the downside? So when I learned, I assumed, what's the downside? The point is, since hetisk evolved from real issues, which are 50-50, it just evolved this way. But kulei pecut is just as good. I came to putting it into the book, I started to investigate a little bit why taka is chatzi pekadin as opposed to kulei pekadin. Why does the mila? So there is one mila. And for that, I have to tell you, there are those who don't like using a hetta iska. They see it as a harama. Harama by chametz, the nesiva says, it's a derabanan. You do bittel, mevatel the chametz. So you also do a mechira. Well, very good in my house, I'm a vatel. What happens if I own $1 million worth of merchandise, cereal and liquor? I'm a vatel. Yeah, technically I'm a vatel. If Rabbi Shalom will tell me I'll be chayiv karis, I'll be mafkarit, chalila. So then it's a drabanan. The whole haramis ribid, the whole bechiras chamis is a drabanan. As I state in the sivis. Heta iska, there are those who say it's a harama in a deraisa. Not so pasha to do a harama in a deraisa. Now, the answer to that is that even though the Nesivis Taka says that we only rely on it by Chametz because it's a Derabanan, some say for others say it's not so. So there's no rule of Derabanan Deiraisa. It works because it technically works. The Mechira is technically binding. If I do a Mechira, even if we weaken each other, but it's if I sell you something, I do a kinyu with you in front of two Eidim, and I sell you my house, it's sold, it's your house. We know you're never going to ask for it. It doesn't matter. In Shemayim, wherever they have the big book of assets, it's yours. Same thing here. We did a Kenyan, we did it, and it's fine. There are those, though, who tainted that Heta Iska, there are those who will not use a Heta Iska because of the fact that they're concerned that a Heta Iska is a haram. In the case where it's Chati Milva Chati Pekad, that's a typical. Now, switch to Kulei Pekad. If you take the kulei pekud in the form at face value, it doesn't seem to make any sense for the managing partner. The managing partner says, look, I have this great business idea, all I need is capital, you invest. He says, fine, I'll invest, but the business is totally mine. Why is the managing partner agreeing to such an arrangement? Where, what? In a case where all the money, the entire $100,000 comes from him, and the business is totally his, it's a bit of a kasha. Why? It's not a typical business arrangement that a person would do. The fact is, and I wrote that here in defense of the kulei pekadin, that it's rare, in fact, that the investor invests all the money. Usually the managing partner has some capital of his own or has something of his own in the business, and that would defend the kulei pekadin. This is what? I'm telling you the way I've seen it in most cases. We're talking about the but that's the downside of kulei pekud in form is it's seen as more of a harama. It's seen as more of a according to the hetiska,
because he's working.
Basically, he really doesn't get a share, but he draws up the contract as follows. Let me tell you the way the contract is drawn up. Let's say I'm the managing partner. You're investing kulei pekud. You want kulei pekud. So what do we draw up in the Heta Iska? We say all profits are yours. All liability is yours. So what happens? I get a salary. Fine. I don't want to just get a salary. 1 minute. No. What the Heta Iska says is the following. It says that it's agreed any losses need witnesses, any claim of profits need Yeshua. However, it's agreed between the parties that there's an anticipated profit of 5-10%, whatever the number we pick, and that if I pay the investing partner his percentage, anything else remains mine. Why does it remain mine? It really shouldn't be mine. But it remains mine because that's our agreement. Our agreement is there's an anticipated profit, and that anticipated profit I'm going to give you. Anything more than the anticipated profit, it automatically reverts back to me.
Why?
That's a good question. That's the problem with the Kulei Pekadin form. It's really a bit of a problem with the Chatzi Pekadin. Because there also, I'm saying I anticipate 10%, you get 5. Let's say it makes 15%. I know it made 15%. The contract says I only have to give you 5. I don't have to give you 7.5%. I don't have to give you more. And that's the way the Hetesk always works. Why is it that way? So, it can be explained that in business people do that. In exchange for a straight deal of 5%, I'm willing to forego having an accounting of sometimes it'll be 6%, sometimes it'll be 4%. People do that in business, and it's a normal thing to do in business, and that's basically what it's based on. In a Kulei Pekadin form, it's much more of a harama. Why is he getting any profits? He's a nobody. He's just a worker. And that's why, that's the downside to the Kulei Pekadin.
In lieu of salary, he should get a share of profits.
You could say in lieu of salary, he gets a share of profits. No, the share of profits is his. But not a share of the capital. In other words, a share of profits alone.
The only thing that happens, what happens is the sale of the business. Why should he share in anything in the equity portion of the sale?
With a Kulei Pekadin form, he won't share in the equity of it unless he has a document which gives him that ability to have it. The Kulei Pekadin form does not address it. The Kulei Pekadin form... If I invest $100,000 in a business and 10 years later it's worth $10 million, that's profit. Then how about it? It's not so simple. Because I agreed to take 5% instead of making an accounting. Okay, where it's known, just like losses can be known, profits can be known. And that, that's the complaint. In a sale, there is an accounting. No, the investor is not obligated to trust the accounting. Unless he does it personally, he has independent knowledge. The Hetesk says he's not obligated to trust any accounting, only a Shvua or to Eidim. So yeah, that part is... Not to give him all the profit. If you give him half. Half of... Yeah, because that is the business arrangement. Business arrangement is that instead of making a cheshbon of profits and losses, we'll just give 5%. That's the agreement. Now, that is the haroma aspect that people have time is, but the defense of it is that it's not atypical in business that an investing partner, rather than getting down to the nitty-gritty of the business, will draw a steady amount of money in lieu, in forego of the exact amount. Okay, one second. Okay. All right, your $100,000 business went to $10 million. Typically, you drew. In halacha, we would not see any distinction between profit in form of return, of fluid money, or of appreciation in the increased value. No difference. What happens now is you pull out the Iska, it says I'm entitled to 5%. I'm entitled to 5%. I don't have to sell the business. I don't have to agree to sell the business. I'm an owner, right? But I'm entitled profit-wise only to 5%. Now, you want to induce me to sell. I own the business. I own ABC Company. You want to induce me to sell. The investor, the question is this. The investor is only entitled to 5% a year. And all he's entitled to is $100,000 back. So now when this business becomes worth $10 million, he's in the hole. Yeah, he is in the hole. However, he's also in the driver's seat because he says, if the business is worth $10 million, I'm going to sell. Why should I have enough to sell? I'm getting 5%. of my $100,000. I'm getting 20% a year, $20,000 a year. I don't. Well, whatever it is, I don't want to sell unless you'll induce me to sell. I own the I have ownership in this chelik in the business. You want me to sell? It has a market value. I'll sell it. It's not selling it to the borrower. Selling it to a third party.
So you could sell.
Well, he can only sell. No, he can only sell what he owns. He can't sell things that. Typically, he can only sell things. Technically, he can only sell what he owns. If, let's say, the business becomes worth $10 million, now the business is pulling in $1 million a year. The person who invested $100,000, he signed a set to Iska. He's still getting $5,000 a year of this $10 million business. If the if the managing partner wants, the managing partner can continue under the terms of the head to Iska forever and ever, and not sell. The other person says, "It's worth $10 million. I want to sell." No such thing. That's not the way it is under the head to Iska. It'll survive the sale unless there's a subsequent agreement that changes it, and there will always be an inducement to change it. But that's really, this you can't, and you do it this way, so you only get your $5,000. If you want to draw it, clauses can be changed, clauses can be drawn up, things can be drawn up. Heck, this was not set in stone.
Why do you make your brother the cousin that he owns the whole 100%? Why don't you make him cousin the cousin that he owns all the
cash? That's chati milva, chati pagad.
Why would that be a halva? Why does it have to be a halva?
The money is something.
No, I'm giving him the cousin.
I'm giving him $100,000. He's responsible for fifty losses of the $50,000. The full loss, that's $100,000 loan. Liability defines a loan. The person who's liable for the money is the owner of the money. So if you give someone $100,000, he guarantees that he's a borrower. Then it's 50-50. Then it's 50-50. That's $50,000 him, $50,000 him.
Now,
yeah, but there has to be an agreement to sell the business. Okay, the agreement is to be taken into account. All right, what I try to do. Now, the truth is, we're not done. Let me just explain, and because if there's I'll take questions. But what we've done is basically explain the way a head to Iska works. Now, the four forms, they're basically kulei pekadin, chati pekadin, business use, personal use, so they are a total of four forms. Now, there are a number of what-if questions that have come up, and there is Rav Moshe's Eitzah, what he calls the sale lease agreement, a way to do a het iska, which, where Moshe created a type of contract. Someone sitting here asked me beforehand how to do a certain business deal. I said, I'll explain to you later, because we'll talk about het iska, and then we'll talk about sale lease agreements. We didn't even talk about sale lease agreements. Rav Moshe has a contract, a sale lease agreement, a copy of which we have here as well, which is an option, which in one, really one brilliant move, A, removes all the objections to het iska, removes the objections. I think I mentioned to you that in Lakewood, there are probably more, but there are two major batei dinim. The second bezdin that was formed there doesn't do het iskas. They, because they are pekukim on het iskas, they just send them to the other bezdin. They b'shita, they don't do het iskas. However, they do the sale lease agreement, which we're going to discuss, I guess, next week. They do sale lease agreements. Rav Moshe's hamsa, it removes the objections of against het iskas, and at the same time, it guarantees. To a greater degree guarantees or leaves a avenue for the investor to have a change in the type of a type of return that he's going to get or a capital. So Mitzvah Hashem, I guess next week we're going to do the lease agreements. We will, believe that, they get back to Siman Kuf Samach yet.
This is somebody left somebody $1,000. After 5 years, this $1,000 it was $800. Why is the guy who lent me $1,000?
Why is it worth $800?
Because the money is the value, like you can't buy $1,000.
$1,000 is always worth $1,000.
Well, you can't buy, now you can't buy, after college you can't buy
enough. It doesn't matter. If I lend you $1,000, you pay me back 100 years later, and you still pay me back $1,000.
It's less $2,000.
It's quick, quick.